and I consulted actually with Mark Twain scholars. There are people that write PhDs on Mark Twain scholars, and I have a few examples of that over here to find out the real truth about Mark Twain. So we'll get to that as we go along. But let's begin, first of all, by trying to understand something about an author. Now, any author can only be understood, A, as you know by now, in his historical context, B, understanding his entire literary world, right? That means you have to read all of the works of Mark Twain to come to any conclusions. Short of that, what did I do? What did David do?
That's the whole book.
That's only one of the books, yes?
No, but this is called Essays on Other People.
Essays?
It's called On the Damn Human Race.
Yeah, they
Mark Twain's whole attitude about everything.
Oh, no, yeah, good, good. But yes, many people, yes.
Many people.
But what one could do is, one wants to read about all of his works, which are very substantial. And that's not even right. See where it fits in? Exactly, good. And that's not even enough. What you really want to do as well is to read the scholarly opinions about Mark Twain. Because how did they analyze what he said? So that's doing your homework. Reading all of his works, reading all the scholarly opinions, of course, that's not really possible. It's the same deal if you're reading, if you're teaching us in the book of Devarim. Teaching somebody properly, especially the halakhic section in Kitaseh, Kitabo, etc., how do you do it? We can't read a pasuk without reading the, what? Commentaries is not good. Which commentary? What are you going to read on that? Every pasuk needs you to read the whole entire Talmud. The whole Talmud comments on that pasuk. Every detail of that law. But you can't do that, so what do you do? Ricky, what are you doing? You teach the Devarim. You're going to study it with?
Rashi.
No, you have to do Rashi, hopefully not. That's what I want to do. Because then you're really not presenting the full picture. You're going to study the Rambam. Yeah, the Rambam is a great summary of all Talmudic teachings on that Pasuk. You're doing Ben Soret Amore, the rebellious son. If you read the Pshat of the text, you kill a 12-year-old kid and stone him to death. You say, why, God, is that what the Torah teaches us? Kastat kapa. You're going to cut off the woman's hand if she does the wrong thing and don't have any compassion on her. You're going to teach that? So you need to, of course, know the whole Talmud. But you can't read the whole Talmud for every single person you want to teach. So what do? The Rambam has a great conceptualized version of the halakhot on that pasuk. So you study the Rambam. Now, is the best and necessary commentary. So you do want to know, A, the literary works. Hi, good to see you, latecomers. Did people ever come again? No.
They actually were here first.
Oh, that was late? I apologize.
They gave us the Mark Twain article.
Oh, yes, okay, that's yes. Okay, good, thank you. Thank you, that was good. So, you want to know A, the historical context, B, you want to know the literary works of the author, the entire literary works, that's very important. And it's helpful to know the scholarly opinion, which means those people who have gone in depth to understand all the implications and all the nuances of that particular author. So that's what one wants to do. Now, the analogy to Torah is, of course, a good one, because any idea, as we mentioned in the last class, has to be understood in historical context, number one. Number two, you want to understand the implications. Again, example of ayin tachat ayin, eye for an eye. We don't do eye for an eye. We did the commentary. What does that really mean? So the literary works, the implications of it, all of that has to be studied in order to understand an author well. Of course, it's not always possible, so we do the best we can, and we go from there. Now, what's the context of our article, which I assume you all read, right? If anybody needs a copy, it's over here. Okay? Anybody need a copy?
Yes.
You didn't do your homework, huh?
No.
Oh, you did it. Okay.
I didn't do it.
I won't tell. What's the context? The context of this particular article is a letter which was written to Mark Twain about an article that Mark Twain wrote about a riot in Vienna against the Jews. Right. Good. And the lawyer, an American lawyer, asked six questions about the Jews. Now, your first question at this point is... No.
Who
said a lawyer, an American lawyer. Sorry?
Who asked the
question? An American lawyer.
Who was
the lawyer? Yes, he was Jewish. What?
Why did he write it to Mark Twain?
Because he wrote the article about the Vienna riot against the Jews. Was there really a lawyer? What could this have been, and what are the implications of this have been? Again. Was there really a lawyer? You all assumed that it was. I think so. He said so.
Okay. Well,
sorry? Why would he lie?
Good reading.
Think about it this way now. Most scholars doubt whether or not there was a real lawyer. Good. He gets credibility by quoting an anonymous lawyer. It's a great literary device. So now, actually, that really slants all of his questions. These are not questions that a lawyer asked him. These are questions that he wants to address. All this was a figment. It was all an attempt in order to present his case.
But we don't know that.
That's a scholarly opinion about the letter, which I'll read to you as we go along. So it happens to be here as well, interestingly, I'll just tell you right now, an encyclopedia of Mark Twain. Yeah, it's amazing. A huge encyclopedia of Mark Twain. He's that... Sorry? The encyclopedia online.
Yeah.
The entire encyclopedia?
No, Mark Twain.
So the encyclopedia of Mark Twain. It's an encyclopedia of Mark Twain's works.
Yeah, online.
The entire encyclopedia?
I didn't read it over, that was the
an entire encyclopedia. I'm surprised that I got it from the library. So the entire encyclopedia...
The library's online now.
Yeah.
Sorry?
It's a Mark Twain site.
No, there's a Mark Twain site, right. But there's... this, I don't think the encyclopedia's on it. But in any case, here, if you want the two references, which I did, you know, Xerox, about... One is about the Jews. And here, Carl Domech, who was a... noted scholar of Mark Twain, wrote the article that what he thinks really of the Jews, which is, again, he's somebody that read all of his works, and somebody that has read the scholarly material about him, they come to this conclusion, which we'll get to after we analyze it ourselves. So he makes the point over here that the lawyer, so-called, was fictitious, and that this is really a self-generated article, which does place everything that the letter wrote in a certain other context. Good. No, that's my point.
You're writing about it, not Mark Twain.
Who, right? Carl?
Yeah, you don't know what he is.
I can read the article. Read the article. To the contrary, you will read the article. It's a very balanced scholarly article. So we'll go beyond that.
Whoever that person is, they can sway one way or the other, depending on what they're...
This person.
About. Yeah, that person.
Absolutely. So what we want, if you've read enough scholarly articles, you could tell by the type of writing it is, and you could read it and see what it says about it. We'll get to that as we go along, okay? So now, six questions were asked to which Mark Twain is going to respond. Now, the Harper magazine circulated with 100,000 circulation in that period of time, and there were 70 million people living in the United States in 1898. It was noted as one of the most popular magazines in America. So he chose a very popular forum to address this issue of anti-Semitism, although that term was not used specifically, because it was a later invention, actually. But rather, it was... his statement about the Jews, he chose a very popular forum. Parenthetically, Mark Twain has been accused of being a racist because of the portrayal of Jim and Huckleberry Finn. He's accused of being an anti-Semite because of the article that he wrote, which we'll analyze. And he's even accused of being a pedophile. Right? So I was so upset about this, I spoke to a particular person who was a Mark Twain scholar, and I asked him to address himself to these three questions. I'll come back to these two questions before we end our analysis of Mark Twain, okay? Because I want to read the article itself. Now, you have the article in front of you. We have to look at this article and raise some of our questions. We've already made the point that the lawyer was probably a literary device by which Mark Twain will gain certain credibility in answering somebody else's questions. Good. The backdrop is paragraph 2. We don't have to read it. Right? The question is a good question. Why the Jews? Throughout Jewish history, we've been persecuted and chosen as the objects of others' scorn. Why the Jews? Right? Why is everybody against us, is the question. I quote what the lawyer is saying, or Mark Twain is saying, I dare say that for centuries there has been no more quiet, undisturbing, well-behaved citizen as a class than that same Jew. Is that true? You don't think so?
Pretty much.
I think it's true.
Do you know enough Jewish people to make a statement? I mean,
the thing is that they're a big force in any society for the number that they have. Right?
That's another point. But have they been well behaved in America? In America as a whole?
Not
all the time. No, no. Yes, that's all the time.
I would say yes.
On the whole.
Yes.
Look at America. I mean, you know, you lived in America for 20, 30, or 40 years.
Nobody's frightened to have a Jewish neighbor.
Right. Nobody ever crossed the street to get away from the Jew coming down the
road.
That doesn't scare many people.
Okay, so only physically right now. So if it's an interesting question, so is it true? It seems to be true. Now again, I've certainly studied Jewish history, and we've read Golden Age of Spain or various points in history. You don't see the Jew to be a disturber of the peace.
Doesn't bring fear
at all. So let's see. That's number one. Okay, good. So tell me now the cause. Why are the Jews chosen for hatred? Number one question. Will it ever come to an end? Can the American Jews do it to correct it? Great questions. Will a Jew be permitted to live honestly with the rest of mankind? Or that? What happens after the golden rule? What's the golden rule, by the way?
He went to others.
Okay, good. Is Mark Twain prejudiced? He says no. Right? You read that top paragraph of page 2.
Yes.
He says, I'm not prejudiced. Is that true? Well, if you were to read all through all of his works, and our friend Carl here comes to the conclusion that to the degree that anybody living in a certain society, which was racist and anti-Semitic, to rise above it, he rose above it. So Carl comes to the conclusion that, in fact, he is not prejudiced. Interesting, it happened because the position was lacking. I'm quite sure that, bar one, I have no race. Right. How do you know that? You read? Okay, good.
What do you say?
I'm good. The French. He doesn't like the French.
Oh, right.
So let's figure out why he doesn't like the French. We'll get to that.
Yeah,
did anybody
like
think of the reason why he doesn't like the French?
Some good lines about the French.
What issue disturbed him greatly about the French, which he saw as the epitome of injustice?
They had no morality.
Dreyfus. In the very famous Dreyfus affair, which was horrific, and he makes the point over here, he deplored pogroms in Russia and Poland and took an almost obsessive interest in the Dreyfus affair in France as it unfolded after 1894, finding it a classic of both anti-Semitism and the moral degeneracy, he often alleged, of the French. Cannot deal with the French. Right? So he gives us all about that particular issue. Okay, let's go on. Right? And of course he says, I could stand any society, all I care, I know, is that a man is a human being. So for me, he can't be any worse than a human being. Good. No, yeah, the next three paragraphs I thought were great. Although I couldn't understand what was the literary purpose of the next three paragraphs. I have no special regard for Satan. Can I at least tell him that I have no prejudice against him? May even be that I lean a little in his way. He likes Satan. Why? On account of his not having a fair show. What does that mean? Remember, he was a high school dropout. Samuel Clemens was a high school dropout. So it's interesting that he became so popular. He is one of the most popular writers in American history. So he really was a very impactful and an interesting writer. So what does it mean to say, I am a little bit prejudiced to the Satan because he never had a fair show? It means nobody ever...
No good lawyer.
Not a good lawyer, right. So he's like, okay, I'll give you. So all of us were against him, and say the most interesting thing about the Satan, we have here his side. I mean, he's a very cute kind of a guy. We have none of the evidence for the prosecution. And yet we've rendered the verdict. We didn't hear his defense. Let's hear what's his defense of this attack. My mind is irregular. It's un-American. It's French. So he really is cute. Without this precedent, Travis cannot have been condemned. So obviously, he's using Satan as a foil to rant and rave about the French and the Dreyfus affair. So he's good. We may, and the last, next book, we may not pay him reverence, for that would be indiscreet, but at least we could respect his talents. He's been around a long time doing a lot of successful bad. He's successful, so it's good. So now, a person who has for untold centuries maintained the imposing position of spiritual head of focus of the human race, who is he talking about? As a spiritual focus and political head of the whole of it. Is that Satan? Hold on to that for a second. I thought of that and I had another question about that. Hold on for a second. Was he granted the position of excellent ability of his lofty source? We're talking about Satan, right? In his large presence, the other popes and politicians shrink to midges for the microscope. Yeah, so I'd like to see him. I would rather see him and shake him by the tail by any other member of the European Council. So it's very, very cute how He's presenting this issue. Okay, now let's go to the serious part of this. Okay, now, the first point number one, Harvey, you with me still?
Yep.
Okay, good. Is this negative at all? Number one, what's proposition number one?
The Jews.
He's a well-behaved citizen. I love reading this. The Jew is not a servant of the peace of any country. I'll read it quickly because I think you read it at home. His enemies will consider this. He is not a loaf, he's not a sot, means he's not a drunkard. He is not noisy, he's not a brawler, he's not a rioter, he's not quarrelsome. This crime is present in all countries. Is this true?
True.
Yeah. Seems to be true. With the murder of the crimes of Avia as butler to them. Remember when son of Sam became Sam Berkowitz? We were all upset about it. And what happened?
He was adopted.
Right. We all felt better about it. How about that? With the murder and other crimes of violence, his butler is strange to the hangman.
That's a very strange
statement
to say based on the last class. So the Jewish parents didn't instill
values. Right, I was just thinking.
Right. They weren't perfect. They weren't school on the hill people. That's
but
all.
The dog was
right.
talking to them.
Right, exactly. The dog didn't instill very good values. That's the issue.
Or the dog.
Or the Satan was. Did they say Satan also was the devil? Told me to do something?
The dog was the devil.
Flip
right.
Wilson,
right.
That was
Did anybody call the police when they saw the yellow, besides me? The yellow Volkswagen? You didn't call the police? You saw him in front of my house?
What?
He was driving a yellow Volkswagen. I called the police. They laughed at me. Yes, they said. They laughed. You idiot. Hang on. They did.
But
the police caught the yellow one of assault and drug order. His name's on the appears. Seems to be true that the Jewish home, but he is guilty nowadays to say of white collar crime. I mean, we'll get to that. Right. Right. We'll get to that in a second. Right. So that, we see a lot of that. What was his name? Michael Milken.
Right.
And what was his partner's name?
Boasty.
Yeah, it was really sad, those kinds of issues. Jewish home is a home in the true sense of the fact which no one will dispute. True? Yeah, seems to be. Families knit together by the strongest affections, that members show each other everything with respect and reverence for the elders is an inviolable law of the house. Amazing. The Jew is not a burden on the charities of the state or city. They can cease from it, they function without affecting him. When he's one of the works, when he's capacitated, his own people take care of him. Beautiful. And not in poor situation, but with a fine, large benevolence. His residence, and of course we have Ha'achot of Tzedakah. We should read those. The Rambam in the Chumash of Avodim gives a whole list of what you have to do to be charitable. Interesting that we didn't leave charity to your heartstrings. Rather, we mandated as appropriate conduct. We don't want you to think about philosophize. Should I give him bread? Not give him bread. What do we say? Give him bread and philosophize about it. So Torah mandates charity. You have to give charity. Because charity is not benevolence. Charity is righteousness. You're supposed to do it. It's the right thing to do. That man is starving. Give him bread. So it's not whether you choose to or don't choose to give charity.
It's justice.
It's justice. Exactly. Good. Okay. So this is what he does. And as he thought, he was raised in a town called the most benevolent of all the race of men. It's astounding. A Jewish spectacle is not impossible. Such a thing may exist, but there are few men that can say they have seen that spectacle. Jew has been staged in many uncultured forms. As far as they know, no drummer has done him and just to save him as a beggar. Whenever a Jew has a real need to beg, his people save him, they say doing it. The charitable institution of Jews are supported by Jewish money and amply. All the time. The Jews make no noise about it, as they quietly do not nag or pester and ask us, contributions, give us peace and set an example which we have not been able to follow. Amazing. For by nature we are not free givers, and have to be patiently and persistently hunted down to each step of them. So the summary is, these facts are all on the credit of the upside of the process of the Jew, is they could no sinner, so that they certify that he's a quiet, peaceable, industrious, unexpected high crimes, brutal positions, his family is commendable, that he's not a burden upon public charities, that he's not a beggar, that in benevolence he's above the reach of competition. These are the very quintessentials of good citizenship. If you can add that he's honest as average of his neighbors, then that question is firmly answered by the fact that he's a good social businessman. He's honest as well. Wait, so far we see all of this. And we pretty much agree to all of this. Right?
Mm-hmm.
David?
I think there's a valuable point that you should make about the statement where he says, which we have not found ourselves able to follow. So anyone who would say he's an anti-Semitic has to also say he's an anti-Christian, because the we here
sure.
are Christians.
Oh, he's pretty negative on Christianity.
He's very
as you'll see as we go along.
Christian, organized Christian religion and how it doesn't impact into their daily life.
Exactly. Yeah. And the last page, of course, does a really... No, we don't know. We don't know. We could look it up, but we didn't know. And I want to try to analyze this with that.
Does he consider himself a member of that?
Absolutely, yes. But he does castigate at the end, especially his comment about the golden rule. It's only relegated to the...
It only works for them.
Right, only in church, right. The basis of civilization is honesty. Is that true? The basis is honesty. Sorry?
Yeah, found that interesting that that's the equation.
Yeah, I thought it also very interesting. Right? A business cannot thrive with the parties it to it cannot trust each other. The matter of numbers of the Jew counts for little in the overall population of New York, but that his honesty counts for much is guaranteed by the fact that the immense wholesale business of Broadway, from the Battery to Union Square. Is that interesting? I mean, seeing America as well. Sorry?
It's all true.
Exactly. It's substantially in its hands. It's amazing, yeah. I suppose the most patricial of the history of a trader trusted fellow was when where it was not Christian trusting Jews, but Christian trusting Jew.
True.
Good. Now, in the second paragraph, again, I thought it was just extraordinary to read those lines, that's significant. That's the end of what you three others are just saying. The fight was washed, got a rip, got by when the wars, agitated by the French Revolution, made a throne too warm for him, including the country, he was in a hurry and had to leave, earning $9 million. He had to risk the money with someone without security. Not a Christian, but a Jew of only modest means, but of high character. A character so high that it left him lonesome. Rothschild of Frankfurt. 3 years later, when the Europe had become safe and sound again, the Duke came back from overseas, and the Jew returned the loan with interest added. Amazing.
Beautiful story.
Similar story. Reichman.
Pulling the loan, he starts off calling it, putting it away for profit.
Okay, whatever it was. He gave him back the nine with interest. So what it was. It's a true story. Reichman was in Europe in the mid-30s. Famous Olympiador Reichman. He had $1 million that he got to America, and he gave it to, he was one of the founders of Charitzadik Hospital. He was invited to my wedding. No. He based for Emily's mother. So he's a close friend of Emily's family. In any case, about him, I don't remember his name. He just passed away a few years ago. Really a fantastic person.
Bentheim, right.
Yeah. So what happened was he happened to sit with this guy named Bentheim, who didn't know who he was, $1 million, in 1935, so whatever that was worth 70 or 80 years ago. And he said, in case I do in fact survive the war, Reichman was very wealthy in Europe, if I do survive the war, I want at least have $1 million that I'm going to give to somebody that will keep it for me, safe on it. And there were no letters, no credits, nothing signed.
No contract, all trust.
Right, all trust. And of course, the story is now legendary that in 1947, when he ended up out of Europe, he went to Bentheim and said, here's your money, here's my money. That was $10 million. He began and started Olympia York, which became this multiple empire until it collapsed. Right. So it's interesting how. Sorry? That's correct. That's true. In England, he had gone up again. In England, I think he had gone. And it was a very strange.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that utterly...
Very successful now. He has only 9% maybe, but still.
Yeah, it's very successful, right. So yeah, I think he has an Arab partner or something. Is that something like that?
Yes.
In England.
Saudi maybe or something.
A Saudi, right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Arab partner.
He's what?
Canary Wharf. Has
Arab. Oh, is that also? So something like that. So the same story again. It's an amazing story. He's stuck with a Jew of high character, Rothschild, etc. Good.
Yeah, but the other story is a Christian selecting a Jew. Here, a Jew selecting a Jew.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's this is more surprising than you don't think so?
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
I would assume a Jew's going to be trustworthy, and I trust the other Jew. Bentheim, Charles Bentheim is that kind of person.
It's not a big deal.
Right. Yeah, of course, we would all do the same thing.
In Syria, my friends from the old country, they said the Arabs always trust the Jews before the other Arabs.
Interesting.
Of course.
Yeah. Interesting. That's an amazing story. Okay, that's also true. Yeah.
That's
also.
This story sounds great, and it, by itself, it stands very well. But I think here is a place where we have to look at the historical context.
Agreed.
Because in Venice, the issue of money lending was asur for the Christians, so they couldn't really do that kind of transaction with another Christian. They were limited to do it with Jews. So maybe that may have played a
could be.
Maybe not.
I think it was asur for the Muslims, not for the Christians.
The Christians, no, Christians couldn't do. Yeah. One, you could, for homework, research the details of this and find it, if you like. It'd be interesting to find out. The footnote, of course, which I'm not going to read over here now, was a cute footnote. The footnote was a very good footnote. Not, sorry?
That's a beautiful footnote.
Yeah. Okay, we can do that for homework. We have to read that. Right? It was a very, very...
Did you notice it says at the end it has these initials, MB, Masoretic Text?
What are you reading?
I don't know. In my book it says...
No, we don't have that.
This footnote. It has MP.
MP? MP? Masoretic Text. You're a good biblical Jew. Very good.
I thought this came from the Rashi.
Next one. Okay, now. The Jew has his other side. Here, Harvey's going to be in his glory. Right? Has the other side. Right? He has some discreditable ways, though he has not a monopoly on that, because he cannot get entirely rid of vexatious Christian competition. We've seen that he's someone tries to get the laws against crimes of violence. Good. He's not violent. And his dealings with courts are almost restricted matters to do with commerce. Right. Reputation for very small forms of cheating and for practicing oppressive usury and for burning himself out to get the insurance. Boy, my God. I haven't heard of that.
That was right 100 years ago.
That's right. And for arranging cunning contracts with him and exit will lock the other man in. And for smart evasions which find him safe and comfortable just within the strict letter of the law when the court knows that he's violated the spirit of it. Is that true?
Yeah. A percentage of it is.
We'd agree. Correct, exactly. Yes. Okay, good. No, so... Yeah, exactly. No, it is... Sorry?
Being honest.
Yeah, he's being honest, absolutely.
Unjustly.
Yeah, it seems to be that way. I mean, sadly, although it's generalizations, but both get generalizations, they seem to be generally true.
Mm-hmm.
He's a frequent and faithful and capable officer in the civil service, but he's charged with unprotected civilian flight as a soldier. Now, it's interesting. During the Vietnam War, how many Jews fought?
11.
Right. 12. How many Jews went to rabbinical school? 2,000. Right.
Yeah, but in World War II, a lot of Jews fought.
Right, correct, absolutely. Yeah, that's a very important point. Right. See, I experienced the latter, the former, and you experienced the latter. Which is interesting.
I heard about it.
That's true. That's true. Well, World War II was because the Jews were getting killed in Europe.
I'm not sure. I wonder, well, in World War II, if they were drafted.
Yeah, it was.
Right?
Everybody was.
They didn't know the United
I don't know if they knew, you know, but...
They were very American. They wanted to integrate.
Wait, the question is, did we volunteer? We didn't volunteer.
Yeah, you volunteered.
Vietnam, they went right.
They wanted to be part of it.
Some women volunteered. Their parents were...
Astounding. So it was just viewed as the right thing to do. I imagine very few from Israel.
You're wrong.
Very few.
Technology, that the way that we fight our wars now, there's a lot of Jews involved in technology.
Well, technology probably, yes. On the front line.
That's all right, no.
No front line.
No front line, people. Yeah, but I don't know if they're going to actually have them fight. Okay, so this is an interesting point, which is probably somewhat true at a certain point in history.
But it's not true when Jews are fighting for themselves, like in Israel, because they still got to fight.
Correct.
They didn't feel it was their fight.
I'm sorry?
They were minorities in all these countries. They didn't feel like it was their war, probably.
Right, yeah, I agree, yeah. The officer is credible, preached by the credible ones, the priest of Bangor. Believe the words, the facts are on the side, and circumstances, will there be? This is the merits being fairly weighed and measured on both sides. Christian can claim no superiority of the Jew in the matter of good decisions. So he's honest, he's straightforward, negative, positive, weigh them. So the answer is, he says, it's good. The Christian can claim no superiority of the Jew in the matter of good decisions. In all countries, from the dawn of history, the Jews have been persistently and implacably hated, and with frequency persecuted. So the question is, why is that so? Right? Let's see point number two. Fanaticism? No. He's going to think that it was responsible for nearly all of it, but latterly I've come to think this was an error. Indeed, it's not a Christian that is responsible for hardly any of it. Now, this is a great, interesting paragraph from Yosef, right? We like that one. Look at Bereshit. Now, he knew, obviously, the Bible. Okay, let's look at it. Let's look at it. Right, now, he didn't know the Talmud, he didn't know Jewish philosophy, but he knew the Bible. Genesis chapter 47. We have all thoughtfully or unthoughtfully, as most of us, read the pathetic story of the years of plenty, years of famine in Egypt, and how Joseph, with the opportunity, made a corner in broken hearts and a crust of the poor and human liberty. He did all these things, a corner whereby he took a nation's money all the way to the last penny. Did he do that, Joseph?
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Who?
Joseph.
The whole country, the whole nation.
World.
They wanted food, they gave up everything.
What did he do? He bought, sorry, Ricky?
Bible system.
Yeah, exactly. What do you do? He bought all of their
property,
rural possessions, kind of property, and then they became indentured servants.
Right.
So now you work the land, give me 4/5 of it.
Who? Joseph.
Joseph.
Did it to who?
To the Egyptians.
Anybody want the food?
Yeah. He had all the food. Okay. Yeah, no, of course. But Joseph set a model over here. It's an interesting model. took the nation's livestock all away to the last hoof, true. Took the nation's land away to the last acre, true. Except for Rak Advat HaKohanim, correct. Then took the nation itself.
But that's because Pharaoh didn't want him to.
Yeah, no, it is true, yeah, correct, yeah. So then the nation itself, buying it for bread, man, woman, child, all were slaves. A corner which took everything, left nothing. A corner so stupendous that by comparison with it, the most gigantic corners in the history of a baby things, to a delta in hundreds of millions of bushels. It's all Egypt, and it is. Its profits were reckoned by hundreds of millions of dollars, and it was a disaster so crushing that its effects have not only disappeared from Egypt today, 3,000 years after the event. I'm not sure what he means by that. That's a very funny statement.
That's the reason that someone was on this.
Yeah, people could do that, right.
And
sorry?
Was it a disaster?
I doubt it. Sorry?
Was it a disaster?
For who?
Was it a success?
For the Egyptians?
For the Egyptians, they survived, but were poverty stricken. They never got their stuff back.
And without that, they would have died.
Okay, good. So was there another way of doing it? It's a very important point, because as Mark Twain throws at us some of the history over here, the question that you want to think about, was there another way the Jews could have reacted in order to forestall the hatred that took place? Think about that idea. Was there anything else that we could have done?
He was doing it under the king's.
So should one have done that?
No, but
if you want to engender good feelings, you want the people around you, you're going to loan money because they don't have to do anything else.
Possibly.
In fact, in medieval Europe, sorry?
Yeah, you
want to check one.
Yeah. He did it for the king.
Okay, either way. The long range good could have been, from our point of view, is do it in an appropriate fashion. In medieval Europe, it's true. The professions are closer to Jews. It's true that the crafts were closer to Jews. All closer to Jews. So what do you do? All you could do was left was loan money. Church did it that way intentionally. Why? Because they wanted Christians to hang the Jews. Why? So we know intermarriage. They did it very, and we fell right into it. So the Jews were hated. Now, how could we have done something better, is the question, if we could have. So I'm not going to charge you usurious rates, 20%, 25%, 30%, 40%. I'll give you the money, and maybe charge you 5% or 10%. So I don't have to live on such a high level, I'll live on a lower level. Because I want to see the broader picture and the long-range consequence of creating an enemy. Yeah.
Again, I only know about Venice because I just read the book in the summer. But in Venice, the town council put such a heavy taxes on the Jews that they had no choice.
Okay, good. Good, that's true. In many contexts, that were true. So the question is now, how do I manipulate the situation in a way that I could end up paying my taxes, charging my interest, and not being hated? Is that possible? I'm not saying that it is possible. I think you want to take that question. How could a Jew have done that which is going to bring him love, not scorn? If possible. Right, let's see.
But excuse me, you said the church didn't let the Jews...
do anything, right.
No, but that wasn't just because they wanted to marry them. That wasn't the main reason. The main reason that he said later on that they didn't want the competition because whatever field the Jews went into were better than everybody else.
Correct, that's his point. But what I'm making... you're right, that's true, and he's right. But going back to medieval Jewish history, the church, which controlled all of this, wanted to keep up social barriers between Jew and Christian. One of the great crimes of a Jew, which was Hayav Mitzah for the Kippur, was Judaizing, which is trying to bring Christians into Judaism. Jews were charged with that repeatedly, you know, for various reasons. And therefore, the church tried to set up social barriers, which is appropriate for a church. Let's go on and see what happens over here. Is it presumable that the eye of Egypt was upon Joseph, the foreign Jew, all this time? Like, was it friendly? We must doubt it. Was Joseph established a character for his race, which will survive long in Egypt? It's amazing. What are the long-term consequences of Joseph? I think he's going too far over here. I don't think that an Egyptian person in the 17th century thought about Joseph and what he did. Anybody here from Egypt? Anybody here remember? No? Egypt? Okay, so we could look at that. We've got to look at that. Ask people that were in Egypt. Jews were hated in Egypt, but why were they hated? In 1950s, Jews were hated in Egypt, we know that.
Nothing to do with
money. Right,
they were because they took Israel, and that was...
Okay, that's a political reason.
It was the political
reason. Political, economic, and I don't think it was Joseph.
There was economical problems in all the Arab countries, and they wanted to focus into something else and got the people to focus on the Jews.
Right, so good.
History,
which is the problem.
They have a problem.
Right, now let's take...
The Jews are the problem.
Literal. I mean, he's talking about the character trait that Joseph represents.
Okay, so
he's saying that the Jew of today or the Jew of 1898,
uh-huh.
has the same character trait that Joseph had.
Right.
And that's his embodiment of that.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree. If you were an Egyptian living and you were to read the Bible and you were to read our Bible, what would you think of Joseph in that context?
He saved your country, that's what I would think.
Would you think that, or would you think that he denuded, raped the country?
He raped the country.
Okay. If you read the Bible and you were an Egyptian, what would you think?
He raped the country.
I don't know, I'm just wondering.
But the money wasn't for him, it was for his
it's the government.
Is that what an Egyptian reading the Bible would conclude?
No.
Or is that what David Azar concluded?
They hate Jews, so they wouldn't think that.
But didn't the Jews,
if they didn't know who he was, they would think that.
I don't know. Sorry? I am sorry?
You need an alien from another planet to view it properly, because the Egyptians are going to hate the Jews no matter what it is, for one reason, one way or the other.
Well, okay, I'm not sure. I don't know. Again, if we were...
called our Bible fiction.
That's why they have no claim to our land,
to Israel, because they claim our Bible is fiction. Their foreign minister, everybody was on...
It's not exactly accurate. They do believe that the Torah was of course, given and divine, but we did, we did falsify parts of it.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah. And therefore, again, I don't know. The interesting question would be, if you were an Egyptian reading the Bible and Joseph in Egypt and you identified, what would you think? Positively or negatively of Joseph? We're not to worry about this. Let's just see that, as you pointed out, that just simply a literary type. Good. Was it Joseph? And in time when his name could be familiarly used to express that character like Shock, it's hard to be doubted.
No.
Explain?
He wasn't making the money himself. It was going to the government.
Joseph, you mean?
Yeah.
People are not going to read it that maybe precisely. At the end of the day, Joseph said, give me your livestock, give me your land, give me your bodies, give me everything. It's Joseph.
And I'll feed you.
So it depends upon what side of the glass is it half full or half empty.
That's looking at very positively.
Correct. But again, if you were Egyptian, looking, did he do that which was great? At the end of the day, you fed my kids. But now it's 20 years later, I'm still your servant and slave, and there's plentiful stuff out there, but I'm still your servant and slave.
Well, how did the Egyptians write about that part of the period of history?
They didn't, as far as we know. We don't know. We don't have it. We don't know. Sign the cry. I don't know. Okay, good.
David. Homework.
Let us remember the study before the crucifixion. So now he's going to prove that there are different types of anti-Semitism. There is religious anti-Semitism, there's economic anti-Semitism, there's racial anti-Semitism. And all these different kinds of anti-Semitism. He's now going to polemicize against religious anti-Semitism. He's going to say the reason that Christians are Jews is not because of religion, and I don't think that's accurate, but rather for economic reasons, as opposed to religion, as opposed to economic, or even, some might say, racial anti-Semitism, which is what? Simply because you have Jewish blood, I hate you. That's another form of anti-Semitism. Or one might say, because you think you're the chosen people, I hate you. When you assert that publicly, you're going to generate hatred. Absolutely. In fact, in this movie, A People of Heart, by the Chassid community, one black guy's on, and he says, they think they're better than me. A very educated black guy. Now, I'm talking to these black guys, and he says, well, we're going to pray for you. We'll pray for you. So I said, the black guy said, I said to myself, I can't believe it. Doesn't know he just did insulted me, that I need his prayers. That I am so inferior spiritually, that I need, and I can't resist, he has to pray for me. And the Hasidic Jew, of course, believes he is superior to all of us, including the black guy. We're all in the same boat, from that Hasidic point of view.
So it's
interesting how that chosen nation concept may have generated a lot of anti-Semitism.
We are prejudiced.
We are, well, some of us are prejudiced.
Some more than others.
Absolutely. Okay, so there was a time when people were still living who have seen the Savior in the flesh. Christianity was so new that the people might hardly heard of it, but confused also what? So the remark was, this come Christian persecuted in Brooklyn, they thought they were second Jews. So the Romans hated the Christians because they thought they were Jews. The meaning seems to be plain, the pagans and other against Christians, they were quite ready to persecute the Jews, which is true. There was a great degree of anti-Semitism in the Roman writers. The Roman writers were anti-Semitic. There's no or anti-Jewish, I should use the term better. Anti-Jewish.
Or Jewish.
Yeah, up to a certain point, right. Some reason or other, they hated a Jew before they knew Christian was. So why is that so? It's nothing with Christianity. What was the origin of this feeling? Now again, we're going to try to come back to what was his first experience of Jews? Right? That's our issue down here. We'll get this in a minute. What was the origin of the feeling? As a boy in the back, some of the Mississippi reality, gracious and beautiful Sunday school simplicity, grew up the Yankee, was hated, was full of energy. But, listen to that. In a trade, the Yankee was held to be five times the match of the Westerners. His shrewdness, his insight, his judgment, knowledge, enterprise, formal cleverness, in applying his voice to straight break, were frankly confessed, most commonly cursed. Yeah, exactly. Too shrewd. Furthermore, in the Con States, after the war, the simple and ignorant Negroes made the crops for the white planter on shares. The Jew came down and forced it up shop. So the Jew did this again. He's always able to find an opportunity and do it. Supply only who wants a credit. As he was a part of the Negro share of the present crop. And this is the same thing as Joseph. At the end, you took care of the situation, but how did the black feel about him? No, he didn't. The black was upset about him. And at the end of the day, the Jew took what? The Negro share of the present crop and a part of the share of the next one. So the Jew got the better of the Negro as well. For long, the whites detested the Jew, and therefore the Negro loved him. For the obvious issue. It's called economic exploitation. Good. The Jews being legislated out of Russia, the reason is not concealed that the movement is a Christian peasant religion, but because of his commercial abilities. He was always ready to lend money on the crop, sell vodka, and his wife, crop was growing, was selling that they came owned. He owned the crop, next year he owned the farm. Like Joseph.
But they got the money each time. They spent it. They didn't like it.
They're not being rational as you are.
It's like the people in this neighborhood. They talk about the Syrians that are buying up all the Italian houses. Right. The Italians are all pissed. And they're taking all the money. And you know, they're still pissed. You know?
They're still upset about it. Right. Okay, in the dull England of John's time, everybody got the debt to the Jew. He got all the goods in his hand. He was the king of commerce. He was ready to go in all profitable ways. He advised crusades to the rescue of the civil to wipe out his account with the nation and restore business to its natural and competent channels. What'd you do? Get rid of the Jew. That's true, historically. That once the Jews had all the contracts of all the money you owe, now what do? I'm a Christian and I owe you my next 5 years or 10 years or 20 years worth of work. So what do? I either burn your house and burn the contracts, which happened many times in Christian Europe, or hopefully I get the king to banish the Jews.
Right.
Now, in 1492, in March, Queen Isabella banished the Jews not for economic reasons, but rather for religious reasons. Her confessor, Torquemada, said, how could it be that now that we've reconquered the conquista, now that we've reconquered Granada, the last Islamic stronghold, which we were trying to do since the 732, the Battle of Tours of Charles Martel, and that's when Charles Martel stopped the Islamic advance in the middle of the 8th century, 732. So the last 900 years, we're trying to get Spain back for the Christians. We found it, and guess what? There's still Jews here. We can't live with that. So it was religious issues. And of course, the king had said, Ferdinand said, one second, the Jews are great, they're wonderful. They give us all of our economic sustenance. We need the Jews over here. Religion is more important. You want to go to the world to come? One of us still works nowadays. You want to go to the world to come? Get rid of the Jews. Right? You want to go to get 15, how many virgins they get? 70 virgins?
Like
the guys who kill the Jews. Same thing. So, this was the natural way to get rid of the Jews in order to reestablish your financial standard. So it was certainly true in medieval Spain. The religious anti-Semitism. Oh, anti-Jewish. But that was Spanish at the Battle of 40 years ago, and Israel a couple of years ago, a Christian Europe had been a white school. Now again, he's not a well-educated person. He's a high school dropout. So I don't think his facts are all ironclad. Although he has some decent insights. If he entered into mechanical trade, the Christian had to retire from it. Except for his doctor, he was the best one. Took the business. He exploited agriculture, the other farmer didn't get something else. Since there was no way to compete with him in education, the Lord stepped in and said the Christian from the poorhouse. Is that true?
Yeah. Apparently,
it
was.
Apparently, yeah. Apparently, the Jew just does really well. I mean, he's industrious, has contacts.
Exploits
when a need arises. It's astounding. Who started the junk bond market? And Milken was?
A Jew.
Yeah. Isn't that astounding? This whole notion of, you know about the junk bond market? You know about this stuff? Lose any money? Me too. So all that stuff over there, it's astounding how these thoughts...
It's actually legal when he did it.
Yeah. Of course it was legal.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that it was legal. It's just astounding how he thought of this crazy way of...
with it.
He got away with it.
No,
it
was
wrong. Being to that. It wasn't... He didn't do anything wrong.
He went to jail in the end.
He said he'd be able to raise $1 billion in an hour. Something like that.
Yeah, but he ended up in jail.
Yeah.
Why?
For 8 years.
They needed to pinpoint...
Right. Somebody had to
pay. He didn't do anything.
You know, it was like they found... How do you... Can you do
it? It must have been something
with the guy. Let's put him in jail. It's all good now.
It's interesting. I don't
Everybody
think,
wrote the horse.
I don't know if it was a black and white, nothing wrong, can't be.
Nothing wrong.
Probably misinformation.
No.
Maybe it was inside the training.
Bonds gave a lot of high interest, low cost bonds.
But it was him, but he did it
legally.
He gave the truth about the thing, but maybe later on it wasn't some truth.
I think it was insider trading that they got him on, and that might have been true. But everybody's guilty of insider trading. Everybody spoke to the friends about the stock or something. Okay, good. All that we have. Now, let me just one more minute. Trade after trade was taken over by the Jew by statute, so practically nothing was left. He was forbidden to engage in agriculture. He was forbidden to practice law. He was forbidden to practice medicine. Except for children to the handicrafts. Well, that's true. The seats of learning and schools of science have been closed against tremendous effects. Still, observed analysis, he found ways to make money. It's amazing. Even ways to get rich. Always to invest and take his wealth. Usury was not denied him. And the authors just show you the Jew without brains cannot survive. Jews with brains had to keep them in good training and well sharpened up or starve. Age of restriction to which the law was not able to take from him, his brain, have made that tool signally competent. Age of compulsory disuse of his hands have actually done, and you never use them now.
It's true.
It's true. You don't do dishes at home? No?
Woodworking, we can.
Oh, that's right.
Mechanical stuff.
No electric tools.
No. This is a very, very commercial look. A most sordid and practical commercial look, business of as of Chinese cheap labor crusade. Religious persons make careful part of it, but not for the other nine. Protestants have the special Jews, they may not take their livelihoods from them. The Catholics persecute the Protestants with bloody and awful bitterness, they never closed actors and hackers against them. Why was that? That was the Catholic of general religion, not trade union boycott and so again, it's the Jews and the business issues that brought this great hatred upon the Jews. Okay, I'm going to stop now because it's time to go home. And we will continue next week. And if you haven't read the article, read the article and make a few points, and then we'll, if we have the time, begin with the source by Mishnah. Thank you.